Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is ESPN 97.5, KFNC, and 97.9 HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
I am Branham. He is Blank. Brian is back. And the band is back together on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Do you care to let everybody know what you were doing yesterday, Brian?
No, it's kind of gross.
I guess people weren't really wondering, but I thought it might be fun to ask you, see what you would say. All right, Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We'll talk about the Astros game that is currently going on. As soon as they are done, Justin Verlander making his triumphant return. A lot of getaway at bats. We'll talk about that. But yet, yesterday, the Astros played a baseball game. Renault Bueno is what it looked like yesterday. Not the best start for Renel Blanco in yesterday's game. I think that was the lead from the Game 2 loss a day ago.
Yeah, I don't think anybody needs the six-man rotation more than Blanco. It just looks like he's kind of hit a wall a little bit. He did not look good. It started bad. You thought he might be able to hang on to a lead and at least get out of the game, and they could have a lead. That didn't happen. And it's not just what we're accustomed to seeing from him this year. And so, hopefully, the six-man rotation can get him a little extra rest, and hopefully, he can kind of recharge the batteries a little bit.
You don't sound great either.
No, I thought I had an allergy attack that started yesterday. And then I was at the softball fields where I thought it got worse, and I didn't sleep all night because I had something really bad.
I'm the walking wounded. Either that or my immunity's far superior than both of yours.
I've been up since about 11 p.m. last night, so
I'm dead meat by Friday. My weekend's going to be toast because of you guys.
I have not been sick, and I can't tell you how long, but I literally thought this was allergies, and then, boy, oh boy, it kicked my rear end last night.
If I get sick, there's heck to pay. Just saying. What's interesting, I'm with you on the Blanco thing. Like, I think six-man rotation can help him limit the innings. He's pitching more than he's ever pitched before. Everybody's using that as an excuse for his performance yesterday. He was on 5 days rest. It's not like he was working on normal rest. He had an extra day rest. He pitched on the 14th against Tampa. Yesterday was the 20th. That was 5 days rest. That's an extra day. So the whole, like, oh, Renel Blanco's tired and gassed and all of these things. Well, he had an extra day. So, like, the excuses to me is fascinating. And I, like, the innings workload is something that I think that is absolutely valid. And I think that's probably the biggest reason that we've seen Renel Blanco not be his best in the last 6 starts or so. Although he had the really good game against Tampa. Now, Tampa's offense is not fantastic. Tampa's offense is pretty poor. They even had 6 strikeouts in the game yesterday in 3 2/3. So, like, I'm not going to do that. Well, he's worn out because he's been pitching so much. And the innings workload, I agree with. But he had an extra day's rest. Like, I don't think he was worn out going into yesterday's game.
Well, not even the fact that it's worn out or not worn out, Jeremy. The thing you got to be concerned about is if he's just gassed and he had 5 days rest and he looks like this, it could be a bigger concern for what he's going to have left in the tank between now and the end of the regular season and you know, expecting to go into the playoffs. Because, you know, sometimes when you hit a wall like that, and if it's truly, no matter how much rest you get, that you really need to shut it down for a while, that could be concerning. Thankfully, you could have 6 starting pitchers to choose from. But at the same time, he's one of your better starting pitchers, and you want him there.
Why can't it just be the other team got him? Like, why can't it be the other team was just better than he was yesterday? And it's not like his velo is down. Like, he still, like, is Renel Blanco. Yes, the inning workload is higher than he's ever thrown. But the Red Sox have a good offense. Like, it is very possible that Renel Blanco is not gassed. He had the extra day. And the Red Sox just got the better of him yesterday. I had a buddy tell me he thinks that the Red Sox might have had had his pitches because they were getting some good swings on him, hitting everything. I think he made a couple of mistakes, like the slider up in the zone. Like, you're not going to beat teams with sliders up in the zone. I thought Blanco did an okay job to battle through 3 2/3. Like, he gave up those three runs in the first. I thought he was better second, third, fourth. Lifted in the fourth inning, though. But yeah, didn't pitch well. Rennell Blanco pitched poorly. If it's, you know, tiredness, if it's the workload, if it's just he got beat by a better team, it is what it is. Rennell Blanco wasn't very good yesterday. Now, I will agree that the six-man rotation will be good for him. I heard a lot of people saying the Astros should have walked Jaron Duran whenever he hit that home run. That's a bad take.
Yeah.
That's not a good take.
No, I mean, look, he's been hot, but at the same time, in that situation, you still got to feel like you're going to get out of that deal. And I mean, the big thing is he looked like the fastball was going to beat him, and he just kind of barreled it up late, and with the Crawford boxes, he put it in the ideal spot to cash in. And it's one of those deals where you kind of got to tip your hat. I mean, it's 99 miles an hour coming in on the outside, kind of lower mid to lower part of the plate. You normally can live with that pitch.
There were two outs and nobody on base. You're not putting that guy on, especially with his speed. You walk him, it's a double, and the go-ahead runs at second base. Like, yes, I know he hit a home run, but no one's walking Duran in that spot. That is ridiculous. What were the takeaways you had from yesterday's game, game two of the series?
I mean, for the most part, I liked the fight. I liked the fact that immediately after giving up three at the top half of the first, they got back to even. It was good to see that. It was good to see, you know, Singleton. Obviously, Yiner is on a heater, which is fantastic. The thing that really bothered me the most was that there were two opportunities where you didn't have to really worry about Duran's home run beating you. And the fourth inning was huge because you get two on, nobody out, and Chaz is supposed to bunt, and he can't bunt. And then instead of at least doing something to move the runners over, he pops up to first, and then Altuve hits into a double play, and the inning's over when it looked so promising. And I thought that they should have found that was one where they could have found a way to squeeze a run out there. And then the other one that really, really bothered me was the fact that on the ball coming in that Dubon tried to deke the runner at third base, don't make that throw to home. You just don't do it, because the guy we were just talking about, who's also got wheels, is also a savvy baseball player in Duran. And the minute he saw that Dubon wanted to show off his arm and try and make a throw to home where you really have zero shot at getting the guy, you give up the extra base, that run ends up scoring, and that run ends up costing you later. I hated that.
I was thinking we should have a low S2E award of the day. Like, and that's what inspired it. The Mauricio, that was silly.
Yeah.
That was dumb. What are you thinking, Mauricio Dubon? And, like, he has a strong arm. There's no doubt about it. But I think he falls in love with his arm. And it leads, this isn't the first time he's done this. I've seen him do this before. You have to throw the ball to second base. It very well could have cost the Astros a run. I'm not going to say that it guaranteed that the Red Sox scored another run or they wouldn't have scored a run, because Duran's probably going to try to steal on Blanco anyways, and he scores from second on a base hit. But you just can't make that play. That was the low S2 award of the game. Mauricio Dubon falling in love with his own arm, throwing it to the plate when he had no chance to get the runner. He was at third base. Yeah. It was a base hit to left field, and allowed Duran a free 90 feet.
And the insult to injury is, too, and then because he airmails the throw, it goes way over the cutoff man's head. At least if you can hit the cutoff man or put it at the cutoff man's about eye level,
yeah,
then you can cut that ball off and you can still eliminate Duran going to second base, but he didn't do that either, and then it puts yourself in a predicament.
Or the runner's like, okay, I'm going to try to take second anyways, and then cut it off, throw to second base, you eliminate a base runner.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's, and I've seen Dubon do that one too many times. I've seen Dubon do that more than once this year. You got to stop doing that, Mauricio Dubon. It's selfish. It's a selfish play, what you're doing. Stop doing it. The Yiner Diaz thing, have you noticed that Yiner Diaz, first off, that home run yesterday, effortless power.
Yeah.
Effortless power.
Yeah.
I thought it was a routine fly ball to left. I don't think he got all of it. I guess he dropped the barrel on the ball. Like, it wasn't this powerful, majestic swing. It was more like he's out on his front foot a little bit, drops the barrel on the ball, and it carries out of the ballpark. He's got effortless power. And have you noticed that he hits his home runs in bunches?
He does.
You look at, like, he's hit 15 home runs this year. Yesterday was his third consecutive game with a home run. Mm-hmm. Remember, he got robbed of one, too. He very well could have had four in 3 days. Remember earlier in the year, we're like, oh, where is Yiner's power? He had four home runs in a row in four different games, June 3rd, June 4th, June 5th, and then 7th. They had an off day between the 5th and the 7th. So of his home runs, 15. He's had two different consecutive four-game homer streaks. That's over half of his home runs in that span. In the span of two different hot streaks, he has more than half of his home runs this year. It's insane.
Yeah, I think it was MLB Net was talking about the fact that he's had three pockets where he gets hot, and even if they're not in consecutive games, within a couple of day period, they come in bunches. And obviously right now, he is riding just an unbelievable heater of extra base hits like that in the home runs. But to your point on effortless, the other thing, too, is he just throws the barrel on the ball, and unlike Altuve where it's on the ground and it might have a seeing eye possibility to get through, he has so much strength that he throws the barrel on the ball and it ends up being a line drive into the alley or a ball that easily gets to the outfield grass for a hit. And now that he's being more patient in the process of the strike zone, it helps him so much to get those kind of hits, and it's fun to see.
Now, he did have a base hit today with a ball that was a foot off the outside corner. So, like, he's kind of, like, sporadic with that mindset because he will still chase. Mm-hmm. He will still chase. And I think the reason that guys like he and Altuve chase is because they can actually get base hits on balls out of the zone. Now, they can't do damage with balls out of the zone, but they can touch it and they can get some base hits. But that was nice to see, even though they lost. John Singleton, another home run yesterday. You can't sit this guy against right-handed pitching. I know he sat today. I think today's a little bit of an anomaly, though, because it's a day game. You're giving Jose Altuve the day off. But big bad John Singleton should absolutely – he's one of your best nine against right-handed pitchers. Against lefties, sit him. Against righties, he should not be sitting unless you're giving a guy a day off and you need the DH spot like they needed it for Bregman today.
No, and I think the other thing, too, Jeremy, and we've talked about this enough to realize that people are going to be highly critical of him because the position as a whole has been underachieving. Anybody that's been playing first base, when you look at what he's done over the last month or so, and the fact that when he's in the ballgame, and as you mentioned, against right-handed pitching, he has had multiple hit games, he gets a knock per game, he's got that pop that you need, and he's starting to get a couple of long balls, but he deserves, and we talk about earning the burn, he deserves the opportunity to be in there against right-handed pitching because he is a weapon.
Yeah, he's now, you know, the offense is the offense, but he's one of your best nine against righties. So, yeah, play him more against righties. There shouldn't be days whenever he is sitting against righties unless you need the DH for other things like a Bregman today. Were you surprised how Espada deployed his bullpen yesterday? He used all of his low-leverage guys despite it being a close game and at times a tie game?
Yeah, a little bit curious to me. And, you know, he went to the well for a little extra for Ort. It worked out for him, but yeah, it was a little bit, it was interesting to me that, you know, you weren't going to see some of the guys that you normally rely on. Maybe it's also the fact that from a guy like Taylor Scott, that he's starting to need some rest too. But yeah, I thought that he might go to some of his better guys, but he chose not to.
Yeah. All right. Busy show on a Wednesday. We'll react to game three going on now between the Astros and the Red Sox. We'll get into some stuff around the NFL. Caleb Williams is weird. Kyle Tucker, we'll get into his injury too, and I got an interesting question whenever we get to that. But when we come back, what's the ceiling for the Texans and what's the floor for the Texans? Don't ask Michael Jordan. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're on YouTube. That's where all the classy people hang out. ESPN Houston on Twitter as well at ESPN975. Pac-Man Joel is Blankers on Twitter. Sacked by BMAC is Brian. I'm simply at Jeremy Branham. It's the Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN92.5.
ESPN975. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It's the final week for Rock the Mic. We'll crown the winner of our 2024 podcast competition this Friday. Gallant George and the Killer Bees, that's us, broadcasting noon to 7, Carbach Brewery. With the competition beginning at 5 o'clock in the 5 p.m. hour, we are officially announcing that the September 20th will be the listener party, too, 2024 listener party. And if you come to Rock the Mic on Friday, you'll get early bid access to our VIP tickets. So we'll see you this Friday at Carbach. Hopefully the podcast tryouters don't Don't screw it up like the Astros do in the seventh inning. I'll say that. I'll say that. All right, 713-780-3776. I have a feeling the seventh inning will be a talking point a little bit later. Astros first pitch, by the way, tonight at 6:05. What is the ceiling and the floor for the Houston Texans? You want to be optimistic or pessimistic first?
Let's be optimistic.
All right, let's go with the ceiling. Ceiling is the roof. What is the ceiling roof for the Houston Texans in 2024?
I'm thinking the absolute ceiling, if you just want to be sunshine and rainbows, is 12.
12 wins?
Yep.
And how deep of a playoff run?
They get to the AFC Championship game.
So that's the ceiling.
Yeah.
That's the not a Super Bowl.
The ceiling is a Super Bowl.
The ceiling is a roof is a Super Bowl.
Yeah. If we're going to go the ultimate ceiling, then the ceiling is 12 wins in the regular season and they get to the Super Bowl.
See, I was wondering if you would go that far.
I was wondering
if you would go that far.
I think that they have the talent. You guys know I've been concerned about the schedule. So that's why even with the win total, and I've seen it vary in Vegas and with other things written with predictions, I just think that it's not reflective on the roster and the amount of talent that they have. But I think that we're starting to get into that window of opportunity where I think for the next couple of years, even if it's not this year, Super Bowl is going to be the gold standard for this team.
Well, I think that the win now has to be a little bit more urgent than you would like think because of how much C.J. Stroud is going to demand once he gets paid. And I have a bad feeling that Mulligetta is going to try to get him paid before any other quarterback has been paid. So I do think that you need to the urgency to win, I think, needs to be critical. That's why I applaud Nick Caserio for being bold this offseason, even if we don't agree with everything, like the Stephon Diggs second rounder. Well, he's trying to win now. Like, they're operating as a win-now organization because they realize that the roster is going to take a hit once C.J. Stroud gets a ton of money once he does. And we'll see how quickly Mulligetta tries to get that money for him. So I'm going to hedge here, which is extremely soft of me, maybe be one of Paul's soft boys. I don't think that their ceiling is a Super Bowl if they run into Pat Mahomes. If they can avoid Pat Mahomes, I think they can win a Super Bowl. But I don't think that if they run into a Pat Mahomes. So whether it's somebody else ousts the Chiefs before you have to play them, other side of the bracket, whatever the case, or he's hurt. Injuries happen. I don't care if Pat Mahomes is hurt and you run into the Chiefs. I don't care at all about that. I'm trying to win a Super Bowl. I'm not caring about beating a team at their best. So I'm kind of going to hedge here. I think they can win it all, but I don't think they can beat Pat Mahomes in the playoffs.
Okay, so then where do you see that?
AFC Championship.
Okay.
AFC Championship. Now, with the caveat, if you can avoid Pat Mahomes, I think you can win it all. Because the NFC, like, if you can make it through the AFC gauntlet, yeah. I think you can beat a team. Not to, like, you know, say the Niners are bad or the Eagles are bad or the Lions are bad. But if you can win the AFC, you can then beat the NFC representative in the Super Bowl, in my opinion.
Well, and I think that's the other thing. The NFC, top to bottom, is so much weaker than the AFC. And then when you talk about the top teams, I mean, look at a team like Philadelphia that got off to a 10-0 start a year ago and then completely just fell apart in front of our eyes for the end of the season. And I think San Francisco, as much talent as they have, I think they are beatable. And so I don't think that it's outlandish to think that, you know, you have a legitimate chance against anybody in the NFC. It's just, it's such a gauntlet in the AFC, and the quarterback play is so good at the top half of those teams in the AFC that you really got your work cut out for you.
Yeah, I mean, you got to beat Mahomes. Now, Lamar and Allen haven't been good in the playoffs, but they are Lamar and Allen. Lamar's won a couple of MVPs. Josh Allen is capable of beating anybody once. Now, winning three or four consecutive games in the playoffs, I would question, because he's a mistake waiting to happen. Even Joe Burrow. We kind of forget about Joe Burrow because the Bengals didn't have a great year last year because Joe Burrow was hurt.
And offensively, Miami's loaded.
Yeah.
And so, you know, regardless of what you think of Tua, there's so many weapons there. And then with the Jets, that roster is loaded. And as long as Rodgers, you know, just looks like he doesn't have anything anymore, when you talk about all the weapons that they have on both sides of the football, the Jets have to be a respected team that has a chance too.
And the win total, I like your win total because it's 12 wins is a lot, especially with this schedule. Now, Brian's the internal or eternal pessimist of the show. We all know that the Twitchers have your quotes like copy and paste it on notepad, and then they paste it whenever they're talking about you.
This is more about them than me, but
no doubt. And then, you know, they bring up the point what you said about the Astros, and you know they're lousy, and you know the bottom of the barrel in Major League Baseball.
I don't think I said any of those things.
No chance of making the playoffs. they bring that up. So you are the pessimist of the show.
Uh-huh.
For all things, what do you think is the ceiling of the Houston Texans?
I think getting to a Super Bowl. It's very. There's a lot of caveats in that because I agree with your. They can get to a Super Bowl if they don't face Mahomes. And based off last year, I would say they can get to a Super Bowl if they don't face the Ravens. I mean, we can't ignore that the Ravens played them twice and didn't allow a touchdown in either game. On top of not being able to stop their running game, especially in the fourth quarter of the playoff game. So I think they're capable of getting to the Super Bowl. And if you're capable, it's one game scenario, you're capable of winning it as well. But I would say if they don't run into the Mahomes and if they don't run into the Ravens.
So you're throwing Lamar out there too.
I would, yeah. Well, more so the Ravens. It's more so really the Ravens defense. I mean, they just had the Texans number. But yeah, I mean, Lamar's a part of it as well.
All right, 713-780-3776. What do you think is the ceiling for the Texans? Now let's do the other side, and this is more Brian's lane, I think. The floor, the pessimist side for the Texans. What is the floor for them this year?
The floor for me is 9 wins. They missed the playoffs, and it's one of those years where you know you lose close games, and the schedule does play a part in it as well. I hope to God, but maybe there's an injury or two, but I think the floor would be 9 wins.
That's a high floor. 9 wins is the floor is pretty high.
I think, love their roster on both sides.
Yeah. And like if Stroud gets hurt, that throws a huge wrench into it. So let's like act like Stroud's not going to get hurt, or you know, if he misses a few games, he misses a few games, right. But that's the maximum extent of it. I think they could have a sub 500 record. I do think that's in play because of the schedule. If they were playing last year's schedule, I would say, yeah, 9 wins is the floor, the absolute floor. But yeah, I mean the schedule is daunting. It's brutal. You might not have Harris for a few games. If Azeez Al-Shaair gets hurt at the same time of Harris, like okay, your defense doesn't look great. I don't love the defensive depth of this team, especially outside of the defensive line. So I do actually think that under 500 is in play. I would have that as my floor.
I would agree with Joel. 9 wins, squeaking into the playoffs, and then not winning a playoff game would be my floor, because I'm not going to factor in injuries. I mean, injuries can happen to any of the team in the league.
And they will.
And they will, right, exactly. So I'm not going to try to predict them. But just on paper, taking into account the possible guys that could disappoint as they age or taking into account the schedule, I think 9-8 squeaking into the playoffs but not winning a playoff game would be their floor.
See, I think it's legit you win 9 games, you don't get in the playoffs.
It's possible, but I think because of this division, you could still get into the playoffs with a 9-win season.
Yeah. When you look at the just everything that they have, and again, you hope that no injuries come into play with any of this. But the fact is that, you know, they could play their asses off and lose some one score games with the schedule that they're facing and the ability on the other side of the football. And you kind of just got to tip your cap at the end of the year and go, it's not that they played horrible or bad. It's just that, you know, the same way, you know, a team can catch fire and all of a sudden last year, was it Minnesota that won like 5 or 6 one score games?
Oh, it might have been like 7 or 8. It was an astronomical number.
Yeah, and you know that's not going to happen every single season. But one year, if it's not, you're on the bad side of that, it can be the difference.
See, the injury things. I feel like it's fair to account for injury, quite frankly, because it's football and there's going to be injuries. So who is a team that can you know sustain injury? Mm-hmm. Teams that have a lot of depth. And on the offensive side of the ball, key positions, I think the Texans' depth is just fine. But defensively is where my worry's at for the depth. Like, you look at the Ravens, they're a team that has really good depth. Even maybe Kansas City has really good depth. So I think there are teams that are better situated for being able to survive if they miss a couple of guys for a couple of weeks or, you know, 6 games, something like that. And defensively is where I worry for the Texans.
I agree with you defensively, but I think you and I talked about this yesterday. The fact that there's a couple of key positions where I would be deeply concerned on the offensive side of the ball, but mainly Tunsil in the running back position. Because, you know, if Tunsil and Mixon, something happened and they're out for extended periods of time, I don't really feel comfortable with their backup plan with either position, and I think that's something that could really, really derail them.
I would agree with you with Tunsil. I don't really care about the running back a whole lot. Like, hey, you don't have a running back and you have to run it 7 times and throw it 50 times. Cool. Like the Texans are kind of built for that with the targets that they have. So, I mean, it's a conversation we had yesterday. I think we kind of overrate how good the Texans' running game needs to be. Last 10 Super Bowl champions, only three of them had top 10 rushing attacks. Kansas City won it last year. They were 19th in the NFL. Like the whole, well, you got to keep the defense off the field. You got to have these long, sustained drives. I've seen 10-play passing, like 10-play drives that were all passes that eat up 6.5 minutes. Like, you can do that as well. It's not like this prerequisite that if you're going to have these long, time-eating drives, that they must be runs. That's not real. Like, yeah, I mean, usually are, but it's possible.
When you now look at the top quarterbacks having, you know, around a 70% completion percentage, I think that old adage of you needed to control the clock, keep the chains moving with the running game was when teams are completing a lower percentage of their passes, when passing was seen as more risky. But guys are completing, the top quarterbacks are completing passes at mm-hmm. such a high clip now that it's really not any less risky than running the ball. I mean, it's just as risky to throw it as it is to run it and maybe get stuffed and be put into second and long.
And you're built for a passing attack.
Yeah.
Like, this offense is built to be a passing attack. So, like, the short intermediate game can kind of take a lot of pressure off of the running game.
Yeah, I just worry about a team like Baltimore that seems to have talent all over the place on defense where they can kind of know the fact that you're going to just pass the football, and then between their pass rush and their defensive line that they can really give you problems.
Sure, but if you look at last year's playoff whenever the Texans played the Ravens, they didn't have Tank Dell, they didn't have Stephon Diggs. Like, it's a different dynamic what the Texans are going to be throwing at you offensively. 0979, Baltimore, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh going to give the AFC hell. Okay. Don't think that with Pittsburgh. And I wonder why you omitted Cincinnati. I wonder why 0979 omitted Cincinnati.
Especially
I think y'all sleep on Cleveland a little bit, though.
Cleveland's got a very talented roster. They still have Deshaun Watson at quarterback. And until he shows me that he can get anywhere close to where he was before he got moved to Cleveland, then I don't believe in the Browns doing a whole lot. The fact that Flacco was the guy that got him there last year.
Deshaun won 5 of 6 games.
He did, but like, he didn't. We talked about this. I just don't think he looked great doing that. And
maybe
then,
so.
And then he's also got to take it to another level when they start getting ready for the playoffs that I have yet to see from him. So he's got a lot to prove for me.
Like, we were like, Deshaun had a really good record just like Joe Flacco did. In fact, Deshaun's record was better than Flacco's record with the Browns. So, like, Flacco led the Browns there. I mean, I guess he led them there because he was the quarterback at the end of the regular season. But Deshaun had a better record than Flacco did as a starter.
Okay, but I just, you know, and again, with the eye test and just watching what I've seen of him, he hasn't looked like a franchise quarterback making the money that he's making. And also, he hasn't shown me that he's the guy that can put the game on his shoulders or take it over and do what's necessary to lead his team. That roster is loaded.
But now, Flacco did?
Flacco was just, I mean, ultimately, he did enough, right? I don't think that if Flacco
had to play
the
whole... See, I think these are two different conversations. Because I agree with you about Deshaun being overpaid, not being a franchise quarterback that can, like, put a team on his back and go out and win a playoff game. But that wasn't the conversation we were having. The conversation was who was better, Watson or Flacco. I think it was Watson.
Well, I think the way he threw the ball and the way he put up numbers once he took over, I would say I would go Flacco.
All right, what numbers?
He had, well, obviously he tore the Texans a new one with Cooper that game.
And he didn't in the second one.
Yeah, right. In the playoffs, he didn't. But when we were talking about his record down the stretch and the rest of the way, I mean, because Watson didn't, like, blow anybody's doors off. When you were rattling off the numbers last week, I mean, they're okay.
That's always got to be in Cleveland, though. Like, I think that roster is good enough where he doesn't have to be superhero, Superman.
Say that, but then you got to figure out, you better have a healthy Nick Chubb.
Well, he's not going to be healthy for a while.
I like
Jerome Ford.
He's okay.
I mean, Chubb wasn't healthy second half of last year, though.
Yeah, I don't remember which week he went out.
Oh, Chubb went out like week two.
Yeah,
he was
early.
Out most of the season.
Okay. All right. Well, I think, and I've said, I think it was 2 years ago, I thought they had the most talented roster top to bottom in the NFL. But if I don't believe in the quarterback play, I would put Cincinnati above Cleveland.
Yeah, I have no problem doing that. But I think Cleveland's a good team. Like, I don't think Cleveland's going to be this 5-12 team.
No,
I think they're going to be around
that.
9-10 win. Yeah, the Texans off base.
Yeah.
I got to press you on this. To win a football game today, you want Deshaun Watson or Joe Flacco?
I believe more in Joe Flacco
That's
than I do Deshaun Watson.
Insane.
Right now. If you have all
That's
those
crazy.
Weapons, if you have all the weapons that you have that Cleveland has, I trust that between decision making and not hanging on to the football too long, I'm gonna take Joe. I'll take my chances with Flacco.
I mean, Flacco had 8 interceptions in like 5 games. We'll agree to disagree on this.
Yeah, I just don't believe in Deshaun anymore.
Okay. I just don't know how you could not believe or believe in Flacco more than Deshaun. Like, to me, it's two different things. Like, not believing in Deshaun versus believing in Flacco more than Deshaun, I think it's a hot take, and I like hot takes. We'll agree to disagree on this one. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. If Kamari Lassiter is cornerback two from day one, how much does that change your opinion on the defense? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. The Red Bull show run is coming, and it is coming soon. One day pop-up exhibition showing the high-octane power of Red Bull's racing team. This is going to be so much fun. September 7th, cannot wait. Of course, if you're like me, the Netflix show has made me hooked on F1. And you know what's cool about this event? It's free. If it's free, give me three. And it's all free thanks to Red Bull. Red Bull bringing F1 to Houston September 7th in the heart of downtown Houston at Discovery Green. See championship-winning F1 cars doing sprints, burnouts, much, much more around Discovery Green on a custom-built racetrack. This will be the first time ever in the U.S., first time in United States history where you can witness dual appearances with two championship-winning F1 cars racing across downtown. Again, one day pop-up showcasing the sights, sounds, and engine start chills of Formula One racing. In addition to that, explore the Red Bull fan zone. Local food vendors will be there. All the Red Bull racing merchandise that you can get your hands on. And racing simulators. It's like you're in the car. Free activities for racing fans of all ages. It's free. That will introduce you to the exciting world of Red Bull. Single day admission free event. Open to everyone. Tickets are not required. Bring the family for a day of F1 fun. All day September 7th, downtown Houston at Discovery Green. You learn more by visiting redbull.com/showrunhouston. redbull.com/showrunhouston.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I think my Twitter For You page was listening. It just popped up around the NFL. Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson held out of practice with arm soreness. So his arm is sore. Status for preseason finale unclear. He just doesn't like practicing. He's a veteran. He doesn't need to practice. He makes tons of money. The prodigal on Twitter says, big question for Cleveland, because like, they don't have the option of Flacco Deshaun anymore. Flacco's with the Colts. Now, you know, maybe Shane Steichen has that option at some point. But big question for Cleveland is if Jameis Winston takes over for Watson, what happens? It's weird to me that Jameis Winston is their clear leader on that football team. Like, he's the one that's always mic'd up. He's the one breaking the huddle. He's the one giving the pregame speech. And Deshaun Watson's like this outsider that's smiling when he does it. It's bizarre to me. It's kind of like the whole Omar Lopez, Joe Espada thing from earlier this year, yeah, where I didn't like that Joe Espada wasn't the one on the top step whenever he was like yelling at the umpires. It's kind of the same thing. Like, I don't want my backup quarterback breaking down the team before they, like, they're led onto the field. Like, that should be the starting quarterback. That's some alpha and like beta stuff there.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, from a leadership standpoint, you want your best players to be your captains, to be your role, you know, the guys that are setting the example. And it is a little bit weird that a guy that, you know, has basically just been in the background for his last several years after he had a 30-30 year with touchdowns and picks. I mean, I guess, you know, if everybody believes in him to do that kind of stuff, more power to you. I also don't believe in Jameis Winston as a backup quarterback.
No, it'd be fun. I'd be here for it, especially because it's not my team. I like watching Jameis Winston play football. It's entertaining to me because he's going to either have a sensational game or he's going to throw four interceptions and he's going to eat W's and he's going to be entertaining doing it. Do I want him to be the quarterback on my team? No. Absolutely not. I don't think
he's capable
good
of
for
doing
winning.
Both in the same game. He might have a big game and give you the ball multiple times.
He's highly entertaining, not necessarily like a winning quarterback. All right, what is Kamari Lassiter not only being the second corner on this team but excelling at it? What does that do for the Texans?
I think it does a lot. I think that when we started the week before preseason and talking about this team, we were looking at, you know, the Hendersons. We were looking at, you know, Akudas. We were looking at guys they were bringing in, and then we were considering, hey, if things go wrong or these guys don't pan out, because we didn't know what Laster was going to be. And because of where he was drafted and how he was stacked up against the other corners and where he was taken, there was a lot of people that had the belief that it may be taking a while for him to get there. Maybe he's only going to be your nickel corner, and that the speed was something that people kept bringing up. Now, again, today, when you hear the quotes coming out of camp and you hear people talking and the fact that D'Amico is so high on the fact that Laster looks like the guy and that he is going to be locked into that second cornerback position and that they really trust him and that the guys covering the team have said he's staying with all the Texans receivers, arguably some of the best in the league, it allows you so much more flexibility because we were talking about where are they going to spend the money on if they have to spend on a corner. We talked about Gilmore. We talked about guys that were still out there. If you can kind of move past that, and now if you do need to do something, it changes the outlook even more so on how encouraged you can be about this defense. I thought the defense with the pass rush alone was going to be a top 10 worthy type defense, and there was so much talent, and I'm obviously big on Al Shire coming in and really manning the middle and being dominant there too. But I was worried about Jimmy Ward's health. I was worried about safety. I was worried about the second corner position. Now, if you got Stingley and you got Laster and Laster's doing his job, now I can look at a lot of different things if I want to improve this defense. But I really like the fact that with a pass rush and two lockdown type corners, that's advantage defense right there alone in the fact of what they can do and how effective they can be.
Yeah, I mean, it solidifies your defense. You know who the only people that never thought Laster was a nickel corner, though? Were the Texans.
Yeah.
Like, there was never a point. Like, I mean, whenever they talked to Caserio after the draft, they're like, hey, you can play inside, can play outside. But he's been playing outside corner since the moment he stepped onto the practice fields over there. So, like, all the he's a nickel corner talk was really from people outside the building. It was like, well, you know, his 40 time at the combine was this. We're not sure he has the speed to be an outside corner. That's why he's going to be a nickel corner. But that was never the conversation really within the walls of NRG or within the walls of the Houston Texans. So, like, the whole he's a nickel corner really was not their thought. I think they drafted him with the idea of, We're gonna give him every. And then maybe when they drafted him, it was like, you know, he has positional flexibility. He can do both. But how they've treated him ever since was he's our cornerback number two until he proves that he's not. And every step along the way, he's proved that he has.
And we talk about it, what that means too, when your entire coaching staff and your organization basically tells you, no matter what the outside noise is, we believe in you, and you're going to be our guy to start training camp, and we want to see you succeed. I mean, confidence is a very, very powerful tool, and the fact that they gave him that confidence, and Nick, this, a lot of kudos go to Nick Caserio on this simply because of the fact that he said, look, game speed with pads and a helmet on is totally different than, you know, running at the combine in spandex. And they believed that what they saw both in person and on film was a guy that when it came to game speed could hang with anybody he had to hang with, and so far he's proven it.
They measure that stuff nowadays. Like they measure how fast a guy's running in game, mm-hmm. and they have like these advanced numbers and stuff. And I even these college programs are wearing the catapults. I wonder how much of how many NFL teams then get that information from the colleges. I bet you quite a bit, because these colleges want their players drafted, because then it's a good recruiting pitch and a recruiting tool to the players that they're trying to get. I don't put a whole lot of weight in the 40 time. Like, it's sexy whenever they're doing the combine stuff and we're talking about it on the radio. But I would put very little stock in 40 time never would put it over how fast they are in a game. Like, if you had a guy that ran a 4.3 40 at the combine, mm-hmm. you had a guy who runs a 4.5 40 at the combine, but then whenever they get the information of how fast they're running in games and the 4.5 guys covering more ground than the 4.3 guy, which one of those things tells you more?
Yeah, absolutely. The guy on the field that's being able to do what he's able to do. And even as it translates to a guy like Bullock, when you talk about the fact, even when we had DJ in here, when he said, you know, he looks like a center fielder, he covers so much ground on the field and his speed is so recognizable when it's closing speed on a pass play, that you realize that the Texans may be ahead of the game in the way that they were analyzing these guys, and the fact that they might have caught lightning in a bottle with the pick that they got and where they got them, as opposed to how many corners were ranked ahead of them coming into that draft.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say they're cutting edge, because I do think that all of these teams are privy to it. Maybe they just have a different like value for all of this.
Yeah, but I was going to say, okay, that I hear what you're saying, but at the same time, well, then why wouldn't he have been drafted higher? Because if you have that same kind of information and you know and you've seen what they saw on film, how did you not have him, and how did he slip through so many different teams that took other corners?
Well, I mean, there were corners that were drafted ahead of him that were pretty good.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I just, it's curious to me that, you know, and they always say playing the, at Georgia in an SEC program and with the competition and everything else, if he's playing at the highest level of college football and he shows that he can cover, you know, and the Alabama corners were going ahead of him and lots of other guys at smaller schools, it is a bit puzzling.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is measurables, you know, it, you know, the size and the speed, just the way that the NFL works, where it's like, okay, we think this guy's going to be a little bit better because of this. But if you watch the Giants' Hard Knocks, like they wanted him. Like they had him on the short list of what they wanted to draft in the second round. So he wasn't like a if you didn't pick him, he was about to be picked in that second round. All right, 713-780-3776. Astros game is win final. They lose the ball game to the Red Sox 4-1. They've ruined the triumphant return of Justin Verlander. They also lose the series. Mm. Your thoughts on the Astros dropping final two of this series to the Red Sox and thoughts from today? How did JV look? All of it. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We're up one for the Houston Astros today. They win the first game of this series, Monday 5-4, lose yesterday, winnable game. Drop it 6-5, and then today, getaway offense for the Astros as they fall 4-1. Grand total of 8 hits, a little more hits than the runs you would think. Or, you know, if you had 8 hits, you think you would score more runs than you did. But the Astros fall to the Red Sox. Blankers, we were watching this game out of the corner of our eye. Just kidding. Yeah, we were. We were. We were slacking off in the first hour of the show. What were your thoughts on the Astros losing this one?
It's a tough one because now you're looking at, you lose two in a row when you started the series looking so promising. You get the walk-off. You look like you're in a really good position. We know how tough this stretch of games is going to be. You want to win the series no matter what happens in totality. But, you know, the Dodgers keep doing you favors. They did you a favor last night, beat the Mariners. You got a chance to win the series, get out of Houston and head to Baltimore on a positive note. Now you've lost two in a row, and Corbin Burns is sitting there waiting for you in Baltimore tomorrow night. And we talk about how this team has done its best all season to try and avoid losing three games in a row, especially since they've been hot. And again, it sets a different tone as you leave the city and get ready to venture out to the East Coast because it started out so positive and because they had won 11 of 12.
What team doesn't try to lose three in a row?
No, I'm just saying the fact that they've been avoiding it. They've been avoiding it since they've been hot. They've been avoided the three-game losing streaks. And because they've been playing so well, everybody is obviously singing their praises and so positive about them. Now you lose the series and the way you go about it, you know, it's tough. Like you said, the offense, they had opportunities today. They just didn't cash in. And JV looked good, but you can't expect him to be like old JV, especially on his first start back.
It'll be tough with Burns. Astros have a way of like hitting good pitching, though. Like, hey, they're facing a good pitcher. And then they have a way of like rising to the occasion and beating that guy, whether it's the offense is really good or they get a good pitching performance of their own. But yeah, frustrating loss. The saving grace, and Keith from LA is texting it in, 713-780-3776. The Dodgers will sweep the Mariners, so you guys leading the division is okay. That's the thing. Like, you've taken one of three against the Red Sox, but if the Dodgers complete the sweep today, you've gained ground in the division. So, like, it is a race. Yes, you want to win series. Yes, you want to win ball games. But if you can keep this comfortable-ish lead that you have over Seattle, that's the good thing. But I was ready to write off the division. If the Astros would have won yesterday's game, I was ready to proclaim the Astros division champs. So the fact that you haven't been, you didn't win yesterday, you let the series, you know, leave out of the grasp of your hands today. You can't declare the division over yet. Like, you're kind of allowing Seattle to linger around even without winning baseball games.
Yeah, you are. And I still believe that at the end of the day, when we talked about it, when we made our predictions, I think the Astros will win the division by, you know, 5 to 7 games minimal. And I think that they're going to be just fine. They're still 10 games over 500. It's just that, yeah, when you have someone down, you'd like to step on their throat and just basically cut off all hope. And you know, we were talking about a three-team race for a while, and the Rangers have looked like they've basically imploded. But you, we knew going into this that it was going to be between the Mariners and the Astros. It looked like this was where the Astros separate themselves. We also knew, and the one thing that I kept thinking about was this stretch of, of 14 games when you play the Red Sox and the Orioles and the Royals and the Phillies, and you know that the level of competition has been ramped up a bit, so you'd like that cushion because you know the level of competition you're playing. You're in a good spot still, but yeah, it would be nice at home with the way that you started and with the guys that started hitting if you could have at least won the series.
I thought Verlander was good, finished the game strong. Velo slipped a little bit, but maybe to be expected for a dude who's 41 and hasn't pitched in a big league game in a long, long time. Threw 76 pitches, struck out six guys in a pretty good lineup. Mm-hmm. So I think it was an encouraging start for Verlander. I think these are kind of the lines of what you're going to see from JV going forward, though. Like, I don't expect Justin Verlander to be a guy who's eating seven innings in a start. I think he probably needs to be a five, six-inning guy if he can keep the pitch count down during a game, give up two, three runs, keep your team in it. I think that the idea of a dominant Justin Verlander, I think that's long gone at this stage of his career. Like, be a solid middle of the rotation guy. And if this is the line score, and I know the ERA is not great on two runs and five innings, but if that's the line score, two runs, five, six innings, every single start, I take that at this stage from JV.
Yeah, I think it'll get a little better because, you know, in his rehab starts, he didn't really have any high leverage situations either. Even in that first inning when he ramped, he had to ramp up and reach back a little bit for a few pitches that were in and around 95. I think his velocity will be, his arm will get stronger. His velocity will be more consistent. We won't see that two or three mile an hour drop off. But you're probably right in the fact that it would be unrealistic to think that he's going to go seven innings in a start and he's going to be the kind of guy that's going to get the kind of strikeouts he used to get and be able to, you know, keep teams in the games on shutouts and one run games. He's still very, very good when he's at his best. He's not what he used to be, but he's still better than most that you can put in your rotation at this point in the season.
Every day, Tay is becoming a little bit more hittable. Taylor with an E. He's starting to, I don't want to say regress, but he's given up a little bit more runs lately than we've been accustomed to. Give up another run today. Of course, Yoshida got him for the home run the other day. Second day in a row, I guess if you want to take a little bit of good news out of this, second day in a row where the Astros didn't use their leverage guys. So the big two that they have in the back of the bullpen should be healthy going into this Baltimore series because Abreu not used in back-to-back games, Josh Hader not used in back-to-back games. They should be good to go. You know, Altuve, you gave him a day off. It'll be good to go. Good to see Bregman back in the lineup. Bregman hit the home run in the first inning, but then had a critical pop-up later in the game.
Well, but to pick up where he left off on the power surge that he's been that he found before he got hurt, that was a good sign. And he, like you mentioned, he put him on the board early with the home run. You got to believe that when he knocks a little of the rust off, that'll just get better. But he batted leadoff today. Altuve had the day off. But when you get that full lineup now and you can go five strong at the top, Pena slides down a notch. Everybody gets more comfortable, slides down to a more comfortable position in the lower half of the lineup. It should hopefully bode well for the offense.
Al says on YouTube, where all the sophisticated listeners hang out, thought Verlander did fine for his first start back, all things considered. It was felled at bats with runners in scoring position today. That was the critical part of the game, was the seventh inning. Astros had runners at second and third, no outs. John Singleton strikes out. Trey Cabbage actually worked a walk, but I think that this was his final day with the Astros. I think Gamble is going to take his spot. Bregman then popped up. They brought in a lefty to face Jordan. He struck Jordan out. So you get second and third, nobody out in the seventh inning. You're down by two runs at that time. It's like, okay, here's your opportunity. Here's your opportunity to at least tie the game. Astros got nothing there. And really, it was game over after you didn't get anything there.
Well, even if you don't tie it, Jeremy, second and third, nobody out, you got to at least push one across. There has to be some way of a ground out or a sacrifice fly that gets you at least one run there so that you're in a one-run ball game. To not get anything there was a bit demoralizing for me. I thought that was a huge opportunity as well. Runners left on base for this team in the last two games has been a bit of an issue.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. We'll get your thoughts from the game today. Hopefully the Mariners lose. Rooting for the Dodgers. 0979, great homestand. Now let's hit the road and get some W's. They are doing great. Clap emoji, clap emoji, clap emoji. I think that was a sarcastic text. That's just my feeling on that. All right, Kyle Tucker, Has our opinion of Kyle Tucker changed with the injury that he's had? Has it impacted the way you think about paying him whenever his club control is up? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.